Hey, everybody, it is time for the Interstate of Music podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Peterson, and with me on this podcast, I've got a really, really cool artist that I want everybody to get a chance to meet while I meet her as well, and I want to bring her on board. She is a singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, which I'm like, what does that mean today? It's like, for me, that would mean like, like a kazoo, maybe like hands on the table kind of a thing. That's
spoons.
About where, yeah, that's where, it's spoons. I can totally do spoons. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Pamela Hopkins to the show. Welcome.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Before we get too far into this, we've got an extra guest on this podcast.
And oh, I'd goodness.
Like to... Well, if you look behind you, you're the one that brought him or her. So I'd like you to introduce our friend here. What do we got going on?
This is Smokey. This is my cat. So Smokey likes to hang out by the window. So we crack the window because she'll turn the other way and she'll watch out the window.
Well, welcome to the Interstate of Music podcast, Smokey. Smokey the cat.
She may start talking here a little bit when she wants to be petted. She'll get down and get in my lap. So
hey, I love it. I love random guests that show up to the podcast. So let's quickly go over the multi-instrumentalist part of this, because I kind of joked around about it, but I am constantly amazed at the skills and the different talents involved with musicians and how they get into one instrument and then randomly get into another one. Tell me a little bit about what you started playing or started focusing on when you were, you know, first starting, and then what you kind of graduated into, and what's your like whole resume of instruments that you're doing now?
Right. Okay. So I started playing the cello in the fifth grade. And from there,
did you know how big the cello was when you decided you wanted to play the cello?
I didn't.
That's
I had
heavy.
To ask the music teacher what it was. And I was like, they did like a hearing test in fourth grade, I guess, to see how well you matched pitch and if you could hear pitch, things being higher and lower. And I tested really high. And okay. So she called my parents and was like, hey, your daughter is musically gifted and we'd like to have her in the orchestra and we'd like to have her play the cello. I guess she needed cello players. And I know she looked at my fat fingers that aren't working. I don't know how she picked it, but
this
is hard for me on a violin. So it's more like this. Yeah. Anyway, so she said, yeah, you're going to play the cello. And it was a bee carrying that thing home in elementary
right.
school every
I'm
day.
Like, I'm like, at what point do you, whoever's responsible at that point of getting you to and from any lessons whatsoever, like it's like, you've got to have a minivan at that point. You know, it's like,
right.
Like,
well, the bass is bigger. The bass is bigger.
So oh, true.
But the cello is pretty big. Well, so I had to walk back and forth from school. I lived probably about
uphill both ways, 7 feet of snow. I've heard the stories. Yeah,
yeah. No, it's probably a 3/4 mile walk though.
Shit.
I would have to say, yeah, maybe almost a mile. We all walked up. It took me about 20 minutes to walk home. So however long 20 minutes is home,
yeah, right.
Almost a mile probably at a slow child's pace.
Yes.
Sometimes we skipped and, you know, we all walked in a group and walked home, you know, because if you lived at the 2 miles, the bus didn't run. So I was stuck carrying that cello.
I would guess on cello days, you were probably more of a 35-minute walker.
I tried to find, I was like, can I please get some picture? I mean, you know, we'd play on the side of the road, like, give me a ride.
It's like people play flute and you're sitting here with a cello, you know, throwing the backpack, right. Call it a day. So did you truly learn the cello to a
played
point where you felt
10 years.
Oh,
yeah.
Whoa.
Played for 10 years. Yeah. That's played awesome. The cello. I actually went to college on a cello or a, you know, orchestra scholarship and a choir scholarship. I got a dual scholarship. So
props to the person
minor.
That told you to play cello. I mean, it paid
right.
for your college, right? So
well, for the first half till I quit, playing. I was like, this is for the birds.
That's fantastic. So,
I'll tell you why in a minute, but yeah, we'll move forward.
Tell me now. Tell me now. I don't want to wait.
Okay,
tell me now.
Okay. So I played cello. I went to a school that specialized in music arts. That's when magnet schools were starting to get started. And my cello teacher, my orchestra teacher was like, hey, we want her to go to this school over here. So then I had to ride the bus and I got transferred to a Little Rock school. I was out in the county. I got transferred to a Little Rock school and that school specialized in arts and science. So I went on the art side, and I was in the choir. I wasn't in the choir then. I didn't get in choir until high school when I went to that magnet school, but was in the orchestra, and part of the curriculum was to learn to play piano. That was one of the other classes that I had to play or what I had to take to do. So I started piano in like intro in seventh grade, and then I took theory in ninth grade and 10th grade. So 10th grade, I went to another school that was the high school that was equivalent to what I was doing. So
how much, if you were to compare playing the cello and then the piano, did you feel way more at home with the piano?
No, I struggled because I went from learning a bass clef instrument to one that, you know, because the piano is bass and treble. So learning how to read both at the same time. So I had to learn an entirely different clef, which I guess everybody has to, if you do a treble clef instrument, one that reads the treble, you know, versus, you know, the bass clef, you still have to learn the alternate.
Sure.
But, you know, I wasn't good at the piano at all. I just had to learn how to read music. I had to learn chord structure, things that I was like, I'm never using this. Like I would never. And
every science and math class I feel like I ever took? You mean like those classes? Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I took the piano theory class. It kind of introduced me to it. In high school, I was required to take another one. And because they put you on a track, you know, when you're in the arts, they say, okay, you have to have X amount of arts credits and you could pick. So I went theory one, theory two, which were both piano classes. And then I chose choir. And so then I started in the choir and started singing. And I could always sing. Like melody, I had a hard time learning how to sing harmony, and now I'm really good at harmony, but this is out of practice. It didn't come natural. But went to college on cello or, you know, an orchestra and choir scholarship, and didn't play piano again until 9 or 10 years ago. And I retaught myself. And so now I'm very proficient on the piano. Because that's what I do for a living, is I'm a dueling piano player and then also a solo artist.
What I saw. I'm like when I'm starting to hear that, you're like, I struggle. I'm thinking you're like, yeah, I'm like chopsticks, you know, dueling piano.
It was like that.
Yeah, I'm like this did not bring good tips. This did not bring good tips.
My partners would probably say I'm like playing chopsticks because the guys I play with are all accomplished pianists, you know, but they're not singers. See, I'm a singer who plays piano. They're piano players that sing.
Yeah.
So there's a difference in what we do. And I mean, I can keep up with whatever they do, but I don't solo like they do. Right. My solos aren't near as unique and near as like
fancy.
Elaborate. When they go, hey, here's a solo, you take the solo. And I'm like, what?
It's like me typing.
Just give me the chords. I got the chords. You know, I can chord along with them all day long. And then they throw me a solo. And I'm like, this is where I make it pretty. And it's not very pretty. So, but yeah, once if I have to pre-practice it, but they're really good at the improv soloing. And I'm just okay. But I'm you know, I get better because I do it all the time. It's what I do full time. And they give me tips like, okay, if you want to blues up the solo or you want to jazz it up, here's what you're going to do. You're going to play, you know, the flat three, and you're going to, you know, flat the seven. And then I have to go like, I'll never remember that.
Right.
Practice what you're doing. You're telling
just
me.
Just play what you
I play, get the
play,
theory.
Play what you want me to play. And I'll repeat kind of what it sounded like.
I'm good at hearing it, but I'll throw them solos. I'm like, that's just gorgeous. I could never do that.
That's
like, so, you can.
Let me get this kind of like straight. I mean, if you go to school in the manner that you did, what did you think you were going to do with it when you were finished with school? Like cello, choir, like what was your, I mean, did you have an internal purpose or drive or passion of this is what I want to do? Did you want to teach it? Like, what was it?
No.
Just
no,
did it.
When I started singing, I then wanted to be a singer because people were like, oh my gosh, you're pretty good. Went to Nashville and with my parents, and we went and I applied or auditioned for whatever this thing was. It was in the paper. Yeah. And they were like, oh, we really want to work with her. I was 19. And, you know, just as I was going to be a solo artist or whatever. But I knew nothing. I mean, I was from Arkansas. You didn't have the internet back then. That was a long time ago. Yeah. And so you just didn't know. And I didn't know. And had a really bad experience because the people I was working with, the producers, kind of felt like scammy. And it just was a big turnoff. And then I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. Went back to college.
Yeah. Was that a situation when you say felt kind of scammy? Was it kind of a situation where everybody was just like saying, She's got a pretty good voice. Let's give it a go and see if we can find a way to make money off of her vocals and turn her into a singer. And if it doesn't work, spin it around, push that one over here, take another one. Is that kind of what it felt like?
Well, it felt like, so it was like, oh, you know, and the excitement, we really want to work with her, you know, because I did the audition. We really want to develop you. We want you to record this album of all original music, which I did. We're going to pitch you to all the labels. You're good, blah, blah, blah. And then I got done with the album. They got my money and it's like, they didn't do anything. So yeah, it just kind of sat.
Yeah,
and I was like, this sucks.
Yeah, they knew you were good enough to know that you were good enough that you'd pay to invest in what your talents were. And then they're like... Yeah. Okay, we got what
they probably had. They probably had no connections. They were just trying to make money for the studio, I'm sure.
Yeah, right. Totally.
Yeah.
That's yeah.
So, I came back and I never lived there. We would go back and forth because we're not too far from Nashville. Stuff,
sure.
But my parents tried to talk me into moving to, you should just, quit college and go move to Nashville and chase that dream. And they pushed me. And at that point I was like, I don't like the way this feels. And the more they pushed me, the more it was a turn off. I was like, I don't want anything to do with it.
Wow, having this is a different twist because most parents are like, no, stay in college, that music thing, it'll be there, but you don't know what that's going to turn into. Finish college for, and they're like, no, go for it.
Twist. Yeah, I had just met my boyfriend, which is my husband now, but and I was like, well, and I was going through another, heartbreak of a different one, and I was just like, I don't know what I kind of felt lost, but I was like, if I pursue music, and then all that happened. And I was just like, I don't want to do that. No, this doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel good. I don't like the way that felt. So I'm just, not doing it. And they were like, well, you should consider it, get a job there. Well, they were paying for college. So I'm sure at the time I had a half scholarship and they were paying the other half. They're fine. Right. And one of the deals was if you quit, we don't pay anymore.
So they're, you should quit. That sounds kind of scammy.
Well, my thought was, you're paying for my college. I ain't paying crap. So you finish paying for it. I'm not a fool. First one to graduate in my family. So I got out in 4 years, but, got married and about 10 years ago, nine, 10 years ago, I started getting interested in it. I sang in church. I sang karaoke.
Sure.
But I quit playing instruments. I was like, I don't have a need for cello anymore. I don't want to be in orchestra. I was burnt out.
It's a lot easier to carry around your voice than an instrument, right?
Well, especially a piano or cello. But I had a piano, but just sat there. And my husband's like, are we getting rid of this piano? It's like an eyesore. It's a huge antique piano that my parents bought me when I was 15.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, no, my parents bought me that when I was 15. I still have it. So he's still trying to get rid of it. He's got four pianos.
I can't stop. I can't stop looking at Smokey.
Cover up, sister.
Smokey, this is definitely an explicit podcast, dude. It's Smokey here.
Taking a bath on air.
Just bring it in. It's fine. It's awesome. That's all right. Get that out of your foot.
Clean the feet, yeah.
So
clean mine too.
Yeah, right. Yes. That's so fantastic. You're awesome. Look at those are the fuzzies, the comfy ones.
Yeah, my air conditioner's on in here. So I'm like cold. My feet are
got
cold.
That chill going. So you finished college. Awesome. So you start 9, 10 years
before I did this.
So what did you do?
I was a cop for 13 years and then I went back to college and got my master's degree and became a teacher.
So okay.
Yeah,
that's so fantastic. So what, teaching what?
I taught 7th and 8th grade English, and then I taught 4th grade all subjects.
That is fantastic.
Yeah. My dad got sick with cancer, and I had to find a different career because I needed more time off to help my mom take care of, if they needed me, because my mom was having like mini strokes. And when you're a teacher, everybody says, oh, you get all that summer time off. We you work a lot as a teacher.
A lot,
and they only give you during the school year 10 days. Well, I have two sons that are type 1 diabetics, and one was diabetic when he was 4. So he was extremely short, extremely small. And, every 3 months we were at the doctor, you had to check his blood sugar levels, and we were checking A1Cs. And then my youngest son, he got diagnosed at 14, and so he's 17 now. So he, mm-hmm. At that time, it was like we knew he was going to be diabetic. because we'd already had him tested. He had the gene for it. And they were like, yeah, he's got the markers. And so we were starting to do a lot of out of town testing to keep him from onsetting. So I had to find something that gave me a little bit more flexibility. And so I actually became a yearbook sales rep and I made my own schedule. So that allowed me to. So that was the third career. And I still work for Balfour. We actually own our territory now. And
I think that's, I think that says a lot about, I don't want to say it's a typical journey because yours was much more, yours is much more personal. There was purpose behind the personal part of it. But when you talk about musicians and artists, they always seem to have this journey that like got shoved off to the side for a while, redirected, but they kept it alive in some way in their head or what they wanted to do. And then at some point it just kind of pops. And it just becomes way more important and they go for it in a different way. And it sounds like that's kind of what happened to you not that long
ago. Everything kind of happened at one time. It's like I was in my last year of teaching before I quit and switched. That was my last year teaching fourth grade. And the opportunity came up where it was like, you know, I told my husband, I went to the dueling piano bar. And I was like, you know, I could totally do that. I could relearn piano. Yeah. And he just looked at me and I said, we got the piano sitting in the house. I mean, I could relearn it. And he just like,
he's like, I'm going to have to listen to you relearn that piano. I'm not sure I'm ready for that.
Right. Well, and it's a different way that we do it. We don't read music. It's all off out of ear and it's all reading chords and it's knowing how to put the chords together, get sound that what the record sounds like. So it was one of those that I started kind of doing it part-time my last year of teaching kind of in the middle of the year. And I was sitting in at first, you know, it was like, I'm sitting in and I'm learning. And then they actually go, hey, do you want a job? I was like, yeah, they're like, it'll be like 2-3 nights a week, but you know, you'll be learning. You're learning the craft. You're learning what we do and why this is a special niche in the market of music. And I did that part-time while I taught my last year. And by the time the summer came, my dad had, like I said, he just got diagnosed with cancer again. He passed 2 years ago, but, he just got diagnosed with cancer again. My mom was starting to have stroke and all of this was compounding at one time. Yeah. And we just found out my son was going to be my youngest son was going to be a diabetic as well. We should know when he's going to onset. Yeah. Cause type 1 is the, you know, is the autoimmune disease. It's not the one that's completely hereditary, but it's when they don't know why you get it. You just boom, it happens. And so all of that was at one time. And I was like, I got to do something. And so the first choice was, you know, my boss was talking to me about going full-time and I was like, well, I can't go full-time and teach. Cause that's a that's 7:30 in the morning.
Yeah. With kids.
I'm grading and I have children. I was like, I can't do it full-time. Yeah, and all of that's going on. I was like, well, so I was in a class and, somebody said, hey, did you see there was a publishing company that's hiring reps? And I was like, where? And this is just like an early summer class. And I was
right.
And I applied. Yeah. So I started working for Balfour. I got that job and was able to at least secure a day job in case the music didn't work.
Yep.
In case that fell through like halfway through.
Yep.
And I was like, well, I can make my own schedule there. I can kind of work from home. I can sleep in if I want to. I can take off and take my kids to the doctors. I can go to my parents' doctor's appointments, whatever's needed, I can do and still work nights as a musician. And about 3 years ago, so I was a yearbook rep. I transitioned to the other side of the company and my husband retired as a cop as well. And we purchased the graduate side. So I actually am part-time with him. He's full-time because he takes the most of it. And I just do it part-time to help him. And I have a few schools, but we sell class rings and graduation announcements and caps and gowns to some of, you know, so I help him with that. And then I do musician stuff full-time. And about 3 years ago, as well, almost 4 years ago, I decided to start trying to find my own sound again and started writing again and recording solo stuff. So I still do the dueling and now I have a band and we play festivals and things like that. And then
so
I record.
Fun.
So
when you talk about writing your own music, was that something that you just, it started to come to you or did you say, I want to do this? So you sat down and started kind of forcing yourself to do it? Or was it something that you'd have a song stuck in your head? Like what was it, the process for you?
So for me, I wrote my first full song by myself back in 2006 after my husband got back from Iraq. And it's called Giving Back to Us. It was on my first EP, but I didn't record it until 2006. 2017, 2018. Okay. So it sat because, you know, I was a cop and then a teacher, and it sat in a drawer.
Yeah.
I was like, I had a demo of it and that was it. Like, who knew? I didn't know then that I was would ever release it or how to release it. Nothing.
Right.
But I was like, you know, if I'm going to try to find my own sound, I have to do something. And I'm not great at songwriting by myself. That's what I figured out. I am good at ideas. I'm good at a storyline. I'm not good at coming up with a melody. And the reason is because I play so many cover songs, I'm afraid of emulating something I've already done. And so I kind of steer away from coming up with a melody. I let my co-writers do that now. They'll say, hey, what do you think about this? And then we'll kind of start singing. I'm like, yeah, that works. And I have to go through my Rolodex of the 1500 songs in my head and go, do any of them sound like that? when I'm listening to
this is funny because, you know, in business, on my business side, I've always, and I've never loved like reading. You know, it's like I've never been a person that, oh, I'm going to read 7 books this year or whatever. I've never liked it. I'd rather watch the movie or read the Cliff Notes just to get by. So I always said to myself, if I'm going to be in business, I want to support, kind of surround myself with the support of mentors that know me personally, that I know what they do and what I'm kind of going to each of them for. And that's kind of where I wanted to kind of hone in my business craft, if you will.
Right.
Not through reading somebody else's success story or 7 right. steps to this or be successful in 3 easy, you know, steps, all that kind of stuff. Because I didn't want to regurgitate somebody else's success story and like stamp it as my own. I kind of wanted to gather all of it from everything that I knew, and it would just kind of come out my way at some point. And it's the same concept that you're talking about. If I read all these books, I wouldn't know what was me. By the time it's done, I'd have so much other stuff in my head and different opinions and all this kind of stuff. I wouldn't even know what was authentically me. So I kind of made the decision. I'm 54 now. I made the decision. I wasn't going to read like a business book until after I was 50. Because I'm like, at that point, I've pretty much exhausted. I am who I am type of thing at that point. And it's kind of played out for me in the way that I kind of do these podcasts. I don't research the guests that I'm going to have on the podcast. If I happen to know a little bit more about them, I happen to, but it's so much more authentic for me and it feels more comfortable for me to not ask you whether a hot dog's a sandwich or not, which I know you were asked on another podcast or show, but I don't want
to. I'm like, what?
It's like, I don't know. I mean, I just eat it, you know, it's like I put it in the microwave for 90 seconds and call it a day. So it's one of those things. I think the authenticity, the way you're talking about it is it kind of translates into a whole lot of different things because we hear so much and there's so much clutter in our world and we don't know how it's going to regurgitate kind of out of us. So good on you for like really wanting the authenticity in your music.
Well, and like I say, because I don't ever want somebody going, oh, well, that sounds, now I do have influences, obviously, because
sure.
there's artists that you follow
right.
that are near and dear to your heart. And they'll say, oh, that's kind of like, I'll come up with a song and the storyline or the lyrics. And of course, here's the other thing. I only do a work tape and then I send it to my producer who then he takes the work tape and his musicians come up with what comes out.
Yeah, right.
So I don't even have anything to do with that. And sometimes it'll come out kind of 90s sounding. And I'm like, that's fine with me. I love 90s country.
Yep.
Love 90s country. And I was like, the good thing about being an independent artist is, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, the first thing is, as an independent artist, I do what I want. And I play where I want. I don't answer to anybody.
Yep.
As far as what music I have to put out or what sound I have to have. I get to determine that on my own. The other side of the sword is I have to finance it all myself, which is expensive, you know.
That really is.
And I work to put music out. And when I do my solo shows, that's one of the things that I talk about. I tell them, hey, you know, great, I would love you to stream my music, but it only pays me 0.002 cents per song you stream, per stream.
Right.
And then I have to split that between the other two co-writers.
Right.
So it's easier if you just buy my CD.
Yeah, pretty please. Here's a hat. Here's a t-shirt. Yeah, the sticker for $4. I make more off the sticker. Right. So when you talk about, you said you had a band, but then you also talk about doing solo gigs. What? Yeah. And not to like piss off everybody in your band, But what do you like better? Do you like solo or full band?
So now here's the difference. So when I do solo, it's usually a more intimate setting. So it's going to be like I do like patio concerts at the winery. So they bring people in every Saturday and Sunday, and I'm there about once a month. They'll, you know, bring me in, and I have people that come and follow me that just are there to hear. Yeah. They're like, we love, you know, what you do. I'm able to goof off more, and I do more kind of the dueling piano style.
Okay.
There, and I mix my originals in with it. My drummer usually goes with me, and so it's just me and my piano and him.
Yep.
And he drums it, and he knows my songs, obviously, because he's in my band. So if somebody goes, play some originals, which my people that come there do, they want to hear them. Yeah. Like, hey, play this one, play that one. And I've got about 15 of them out, and then we've got like six more that are releasing. So it's, you know, okay, do you want to hear a new one that I just wrote? You know, and I could actually be a little bit more personal. Whereas when my band does it, I like the full sound of the band, because the songs that I've written and that you would hear on the radio, on Spotify, on iTunes, on my CD are all full band. They're not stripped down like I have to do them.
Right.
And so in my head, I hear the band. They can't hear the band. Then I'm like, you got to check out the full band version, especially because awesome. I do like country rock. And there's a lot of, you know, a few of my songs are really heavy guitar. I do some country pop as well. But, you know, basic style, like, you know, I have a song called Giving a Damn, Don't Go With My Outfit. It's a country rock song.
Yeah.
Little Rock Famous is a country rock song. It's very heavy on guitar. I have to play on the piano just to sound the same.
Yeah, right.
Somebody, so I like the full band sound, but yep. I like the intimacy of doing the solo show if the crowd is with me.
Well, the solo shows are, there's just a lot more opportunities to do them than full bands.
Right. Well, there I can do way more, you know, because a lot of businesses, like restaurants and things like that, they just want to pay, you know, the guitar player with his, you know, I want to play one person.
Yeah.
When I do a band, you know, I have to price it out because I have to pay my band, and I pay my band well.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, you know, since I do dueling pianos full time, I take off from that to do band stuff. So I have to replace my income. And I explain it that way. I'm like, look, you know, I have to make at least this just for me.
Yep.
And I need my band members not to be booked with somebody else when I need them. So I pay them the same as I make. So if I'm going to be making 300 or 400 for that 3 hour block you need me paying, I have to multiply that times the number I have in my band.
Yep.
So, and that's just, to me, that's just fair. I know a lot of bands don't do that, or a lot of venues only want to pay 400 for the night. You're doing 3 hours, you're splitting it four ways. I'm like, $100?
Ouch.
That's a lot of carrying in equipment, a lot of setting up. And
but that's why I never figure out why drummers chose to be drummers, because if they're going to get paid the same as the guitar player or the vocalist, man, they got a raw deal.
Right. But I try to be very fair with my band, and I try to split equally. Just because, and I tell them, they're like, that not everybody does that, or they have their own bands where it pays less and they don't make as much. And I'm like, well, you know, we don't play as often, and I need you to play when I need you to play, and I need to make it worth your time to not go play with that band for $100. I need you to play for me for $300.
I hope a lot of people are hearing that side of it, because people should pay, venues should pay for the value of the talent that they're putting out there, not just trying to, you know, bring in all these people because they've got live music and they make all this money at the bar. And boy, we only got that band for $400. It, you know, the value has to be there. It has to start to elevate, because I'm going to tell you right now, I owned a bar that we did. I had live original bands coming through on a regular basis, and I paid well. And I paid my staff well, my bartenders well. And it was one of those things where I'm looking at what I was paying bands back then, and they're still getting paid. It hasn't changed. No. So what the hell is going on here? All of their equipment costs have gone up. Travel has gone up. Everything about it has gone up. But yet you think you can keep on paying bands the same $200 for an acoustic, you know, set or a duo, and then $500 for a full band. It's the same everywhere, and it's like this flat rate that nobody's changed. Because, and I love the fact that you're saying, no, this is what it is, this is why, and if you want this is what it's going to be.
Well, and I'm fine with turning it down. And there's some that I'll negotiate a little bit, but I do explain to them. I'm like, you know, it's because they'll say, and some people are like, oh my gosh, that's a lot. You know, if I say, well, we're between $1,300 and $1,500, you know, that's the start. We play a wedding, it's more.
Right.
Because it's specialty. And
yeah.
We do different things, you know, for the weddings and for different.
That you play their song list, you learn 15 songs that they love and all the extra time that goes into it.
Right. And it's almost like people don't realize, you know, they're like, well, gosh, that's only like, we're only asking you to play for 2 hours. I said, yeah, you're asking me to play for 2 hours, but it takes us 2 hours to set up by the time, if you have nothing there.
Right.
By the time we've loaded in, we've set up sound, we've, you know, I've purchased all this equipment so that we sound good for your, that has to be paid for. And I'm not asking you to pay for all of it, but that has to come back to me.
Yep.
So I have to figure out a way to put that in the band account as well. You know, when I just spent $2,000 on speakers and on a mixing board, on this, on that. And then, you know, my drummer's, his, you know, pedal crashes through the bass drum. He's got to replace that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, that stuff costs money and it's, that's why, you know, and I'm like, you don't have to pay my price. You get a different band. And I'm okay with that because, you know, it's whatever.
This is my chance. Hey, everybody out there that's got a venue. Step up. Let's go. Come on. These bands are, we love music. We love live music. They need to start making real money. At least let's just start moving it up slowly if you have to. But my gosh, if you're paying $500 tomorrow, start paying $700, $650. But there's got to be some level of elevation of from back in the mid-90s to early 2000s. Come on. I was paying what they're making now. Let's step it up, people.
Well, and like I said, it's load in time. It's then you can't load in and do all that and then start. You got to have, because people have to come in. You can't be like still setting up when people are coming in. That's kind of unprofessional. So you want to have it looking good. So you're there early and then you're there an hour and a half after. And then you drive home. It's an entire day for us. It's not 2 hours. You know, they look at it as 2 hours or 3 hours. I'm like, no, it's an entire day.
100%.
It's a whole day. And then my venues will be, you know, hour or two away.
So Pamela, tell me this as we kind of wrap things up here. What's really exciting? What are you really excited about that's going on now or you've got coming in the future that you kind of want to share or something that happened 5 years ago that you're re-releasing that you're really excited? What do you want to tell me about Pamela Hopkins like today and what's coming down the road for us to start following you and just getting to know and love you?
So today, the best thing I guess right now that's kind of got me smiling real big is the Arkansas Country Music Awards. Right now, until the 14th of this month, you can go and vote. ArkansasMusic.org/vote. I am up for 3 ACMA awards. I'm up for Country Artist of the Year, Female Vocalist of the Year, and Album of the Year for Giving a Damn, Don't Go With My Outfit. So I could use a vote if ever, if you want to go there, it's just countrymusic.org, or countrymusic.org, scratch that, ArkansasMusic.org/vote. And my name is Pamela Hopkins, and I'm in those 3 categories. So I'm in Country Artist of the Year, Female Vocalist, and Album of the Year for Giving a Damn, Don't Go With Outfit. That voting is going on from now till March 4th, 14th, 14th. And then next Tuesday, I leave for Alaska and Hawaii. So I'm doing a military tour for the next 2 weeks, starting on Tuesday.
No kidding.
So I'll be up there in Fairbanks, Alaska, Fort Wainwright, Clear SFS, I think is what it's called. It's like Space Force something up there. I'm not a military person. My husband was. I'm not. So me good remembering that stuff off the top of my head. And then we fly to Hawaii the next week, and we'll be on. I know we'll be at Pearl Harbor for 2 nights, and another base for 2 nights for 4 weeks.
Have you ever done military type tours before?
I have. I was in Guantanamo Bay back in October, and then I did a European tour right before COVID.
How do you do those shows without just being so emotional during those shows? I'm just hearing you talk about it, the fact that you're going to do that, it's those are goosebump type things and events. It's got to be so exciting to have those, and here's the thing, they've got to be excited that you're coming to do it, but for you it's got to be like such this opportunity of being able to do it in such cool places for amazing people.
Right. So I get emotional a little bit when we get there, but just seeing the soldiers and their families enjoying what we do, and you know, kind of having been able to relax and let their hair down and listen to music and clap along and sing along. It's a blessing, and that's why every time the opportunity comes up, I'm like, sign me up, sign me up, sign me up. And so, like I said, we were in Guantanamo Bay for we're supposed to be there for a week. And then fly to Honduras, and they closed the Honduras, that base right before we left. I don't know if it was a COVID deal or if they had the movement coming through. I don't know. We were just told we couldn't go, so we had to fly back home. But being in Guantanamo Bay with those guys, they hadn't had entertainment there. Of course, we were the first ones out after COVID.
Right.
And having them just be like, thank you. I mean, the funny thing is, as you go and they're thanking us. Yeah. We're like, no, thank you.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Thank so, you.
It's such,
you know,
it's such a cool the passion from both sides and the appreciation from both sides. It's unique, and it's not like any other gig you're gonna do ever.
No. So every time the opportunity comes up, and we work with Armed Forces Entertainment and Pro Tour Productions, and every time my tour manager calls me and says, "Hey, are you wanting to do this?" I just tell her yes. And then I tell my boss I'm not working.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
Cause we always know like a few months in advance. So I'm like, hey, by the way, I need these days off. And she's like, okay. And I'm like, doing a military tour. Sorry. I'm not going to be here. And you know, all she could say is, and I tell my other boss too, my husband, I'm like, hey, you got this covered. You got this. Yeah. And he always goes, if I tell you no, which are you going to say?
Yeah, it doesn't
going anyway.
Right.
Going anyway. And he was former military, and he's a disabled vet. So it's my way of giving back. And I really enjoy it. And it's an honor to be able to do that.
Pamela Hopkins, it has been an honor, and so awesome to get to know what you do, how you do it, and the passion behind what you're doing, and everything that you've done along the way that's made you who you are. It's been great to get to know you. And everybody, just vote for this girl every time you see or hear about her. Start following her and start paying attention to her music. It's what we should do. I mean, elevate the people that are going out there and trying to elevate everybody around them. So, Pamela Hopkins, thanks for being part of this podcast. It's been great to get to know you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I was gonna tell you something else real quick too.
Yeah, hit me.
As far if I have time. Do I have a minute?
Yeah, you got it. Go.
Oh yeah, yeah. So we're talking about instruments. I also play the drums and the bass and the harmonica. So there's more than just two. We only got to the two.
Every multi-instrumentalist has got to finally at some point list off all the things they can do so that my kazoo and my hand drums on the table and my spoons mean nothing.
Hey, I was going to tell you, I don't play the kazoo, so you got me there.
Boom.
And the spoons, it's
important stuff. And so if you need anybody on your tour that plays the spoons, the kazoo. I am in. I would love to do a military base. Yeah, Alaska, Hawaii, Kazumi. I'm all about it.
I got you.
Pamela Hopkins, this is awesome. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And check me out. Go to my website, PamelaHopkinsMusic.com.
100%. Hey, Smokey, wake up. Smokey. All right, she's out. She's been. After a hard spa day of bathing, she's knocked out now. That's awesome.
She's got the sun's coming in. It's starting to shade perfect. Over her now. She's it's like, perfect. It's bedtime.
This has been the Interstate of Music Podcast. Peterson out.